First, like to thank Barry Guanter. We've known each other for quite some time now, and I'd like to. Oh, thank you so much. Okay, thank you. I'd like to thank Barry and also Francis Parks. Is Francis here? Yes, another good old friend. Who first made the invitation to me to join you this afternoon, along with the other members of the Human Rights Commission. I'd like to thank All Saints, Father Fred, and all of the community here to invite me to speak with you. And also, you've heard their introductions, and I am quite honored to share this stage with my fellow speakers, and I want to thank them for all that you are and all that you do. Today, as we know, is an auspicious date. We recognize Human Rights Day on December 10th, when the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly in 1948. This document spoke to the hopes of the nations and peoples of the world after a consuming world war and concerns about tyranny and totalitarianism that witnessed atrocities of war, genocide, and all forms of hatred and violence against peoples of the world. The Declaration of Human Rights document is the aspirational testament to our belief in the inherent value of every person's life and their right to equality, justice, and freedom. Its preamble states, "All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights." Our theme this afternoon, human rights everywhere, always, could not be more necessary today. We are in dire need of reaffirmation of these principles and the actions and activism to make them real and not just aspirational. And so we are here to remember and recommit ourselves to the principles of international human rights. Eleanor Roosevelt, chairwoman of the United Nations Human Rights Commission that drafted the declaration, asked the question, "Where, after all, do universal human rights begin?" In small places, close to home, so close and so small that they cannot be seen on any maps of the world. Unless these rights have meaning there, they have little meaning anywhere. Without concerted citizen action to uphold them close to home, we shall look in vain for progress in the larger world. I imagine that this is what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was thinking when he accepted the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway, on December 10, 1964, when he made the very type of connection that Eleanor Roosevelt spoke about in terms of the local nature and imperative of human rights. Dr. King stated, "I accept the Nobel Peace Prize at a moment when 22 million Negroes of the United States of America are engaged in a creative battle of a civil rights movement which is moving with determination and a majestic scorn for risk and danger to establish a reign of freedom and a rule of justice." Let me add that on December 10, 1964, the same day that Dr. King accepted the Nobel Peace Prize, an African-American man named Frank Morris was murdered in a small town in Faraday, Louisiana. He was held at gunpoint by three white men who poured a flammable liquid around his shoe shop and lit it aflame. Mr. Morris suffered third-degree burns over his body and died from his injuries 3 days later. No one has been held accountable for Mr. Morris's death. At the Cold Case Justice Initiative, we have worked with Mr. Morris's family to work for justice and accountability for them and other victims of racial violence that occurred during the civil rights era, mostly with impunity. So I think a lot about December 10th. What world then, what United States, what racial inequality and racial injustice was Dr. King describing as though it were only yesterday? Was it Faraday? Was it Ferguson? Was it Charleston? Was it Charlottesville? Was it Florida? Was it Texas? Was it Cleveland? Was it Milwaukee? Was it Chicago? Was it Orlando? Was it Staten Island? Or was it Syracuse? Was it Guantanamo? Was it Rikers? Was it Attica? Was it the ironically named Onondaga County Public Safety Building? These indeed are extraordinary times. We are living in a time in which issues of sexual harassment are receiving great public attention. Very courageous women and men have come forward and spoken publicly about the sexual harassment and sexual violence that they have experienced at the hands of powerful men in some of the highest offices in our government, including the highest office in our government, as well as the arts and entertainment, journalism and broadcasting, religious institutions, business and culture, than at any time in recent memory. The abuses these survivors detail have taken place over decades by purveyors of such violence, often shielded by conspiracies of silence in a business as usual atmosphere that routinely violated the human rights, mostly of girls and women, but also of boys and men. But our memories cannot be short. We must acknowledge that enslaved women of African descent, Native American women, and immigrant women have been subjected to the intersectional racist and gender violence since before and after this nation's founding. We must remember Anita Hill and how she was villainized over her testimony for the sexual harassment by then Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas, who himself was the former chairman of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. We must acknowledge the worldwide phenomenon of gender violence and subordination of women and girls. Most astounding, the very peacekeepers who have been assigned to protect women's lives, in fact, have been primary violators committing offenses of rape, like UN peacekeepers in the Central African Republic and other war-torn locations, as recently as 2016. As Atul Karrer, UN's Undersecretary for Field Support stated, we must not allow protectors to become predators. This is true for women and girls everywhere. If indeed these current revelations reflect a watershed moment in the United States and across the globe, it means that there must be justice for the victims and accountability for the violators of gender-based violence and harassment. There can no longer be limits placed on the aspirations of women and girls to reach their full human potential. All societies and communities must ensure that possibilities are open to them in every sphere. This must include the end of violence and inequality in every workplace, not just the most prominent, and in every educational environment and in every area of social interaction in international, national, and local communities. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. This is the principle, and it is all-inclusive. That means that it also must include members of LGBT communities, wherever they live. In the U.S., we are witnessing an invigorated attempt to reverse gains for equality by LGBT people. We see this particularly in recent events and actions by the Department of Justice in cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. As more and more countries recognize marriage equality rights for same-sex couples, Australia and Austria being among the most recent, for example. The U.S. Department of Justice has taken an official position against these rights. In Masterpiece Cake versus Colorado's Civil Rights Commission, for instance, argued just last week, the Department of Justice advanced an argument that there is a religious exemption for business owners who do not want to provide marriage services to LGBT couples. We must be very clear that the recognition of religious beliefs does not entitle the right to discriminate. Such religious exemptions have long been argued and rejected as bases against demands for equality. We have seen this before. It was not just racism and white supremacy arguments or patriarchy and misogyny that have claimed the right to discriminate on the basis of religion. The UN Special Rapporteur Shahid spoke at a conference on faith and sexuality last year and reiterated the UN Human Rights Committee's stance that freedom of religion does not justify discrimination against women, adherence to other religions, non-believers, or any other groups. Ryan Thorson of Human Rights Watch states that when religion becomes a blunt tool to deny rights to LGBT people, women, racial and religious minorities, and other marginalized groups, those who care about human rights have good reason to become concerned. The former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon spoke about combating LGBT discrimination in saying, "Some say that sexual orientation and gender identity are sensitive issues. I understand. Like many of my generation, I did not grow up talking about these issues. But I learned to speak out because lives are at stake and because it is our duty under the United Nations Charter and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to protect the rights of everyone, everywhere." Rather, it would be the case that the Department of Justice protected LGBT people's rights against discrimination in the workplace, where it has also sided with a view that Title VII does not protect against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. What if, instead of retrenching on equal rights gained by LGBT people toward full citizenship and human rights, the U.S. government advanced the safety and health concerns of the transgender community in U.S. prisons and jails, where data from the National Prison Rape Elimination Act show that more than one-third of transgender people in prisons and jails report experiencing some sort of sexual victimization from other prisoners or from prison staff, where the murders of transgender women and men are based on bias in cities and states across the U.S. and countries across the globe. Human Rights Watch has also documented police harassment of transgender women and sex workers in U.S. cities and in immigration centers. Surely there is progress, but much more needs to be done. Deeply embedded homophobic and transphobic attitudes, criminalization, abuse and exclusion, lack of legal protection expose many people in the LGBT community around the world to violations of their basic human rights without legal recourse. In December 1964, Dr. King concluded his Nobel speech stating, "I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have 3 meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity and equality and freedom for their spirits. These beliefs are the very essence of human rights, international human rights, national human rights, local and community human rights, workplace human rights, environmental human rights, safety net human rights, inviolate, inherent, bodily human rights, self-loving and the right to love whom you choose human rights, the right to be safe and free from physical and sexual violence, human rights, the right to be safe from gun violence that take our lives and destroy our youth. We pray for all those whose lives are taken, like the 18-year-old just last night in Syracuse. Another needless death in the long list of needless deaths that cut short individual lives and the promise of our communities. Human rights is simply the fundamental right to be human. Upon accepting the Peace Prize on December 10th, Dr. King said, "I come to Oslo as a trustee, inspired with the renewed dedication to humanity. Humbly, I call on all of us to accept our challenges in the same vein. We must create a world that is safe for all people. Our own legacy must be a legacy of justice, equality, freedom, and love. So I come to you, inspired by you, and confident in you, that we can and we will set aside the despair we are feeling in the present time and renew our dedication to humanity and our activism to realize those goals." Thank you very much.
Our next speaker will be Bruce Sexton.